All right, so we're diving into some pretty interesting stuff today. And you brought this case, Hudgens v. Southwest Airlines, to the table. And it's not just about, your typical flight delay or anything. It gets into some serious questions about what airlines are responsible for when they've got passengers with guns on board, and even gets into like the limits of punitive damages under the Constitution. We've got the court opinion itself, a standard case brief on it. So yeah, we're going deep on this one. I guess the goal here is to really break it all down for our listeners. What are the big takeaways from this case and why should they care about it? Especially, for those of us who like digging into the finer points of the law.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think right from the start, what makes this case so fascinating is the kind of unique situation that kicked off this whole legal battle. It's not your everyday passenger dispute.
Not at all. So let's talk about that unusual setup. We've got bounty hunters, bail enforcement agents, specifically coming from Virginia, not law enforcement officers, and they're carrying handguns onto a commercial flight heading to Arizona to track down a fugitive. Now, Southwest Airlines, they did have a protocol in place. They said, arrive early, have your photo ID, and bring letters explaining why you need to transport these weapons. And the bounty hunters, they followed these instructions to a T. Seems like they did everything by the book, at least initially.
And it seems that way, but if you tie this back to aviation safety regulations, specifically Federal Aviation Regulation 14 CFR Section 101.01, airlines have a very clear responsibility to verify that anyone carrying a weapon on board is authorized to do so. And this regulation exists, to ensure the safety and security of everyone on that aircraft.
And this is where things get really interesting, because even though these bounty hunters showed ID that said H&D enforcement agent and even signed these notice to armed individuals form Southwest Airlines personnel, they made a mistake. They thought these guys were actual law enforcement officers. So because of that misunderstanding, they were allowed to carry their weapons onto the plane instead of having to check them like anyone else who's not authorized law enforcement would have to do. So a pretty crucial misidentification right there.
Yeah, and that raises a big question, right, for anyone thinking about the legal side of this. What level of due diligence are airlines actually required to do in situations like this? Clearly, just glancing at a credential with the word enforcement on it isn't enough to satisfy what the regulation is actually trying to do. It suggests that there needs to be a much more thorough process to make sure that someone is legitimately authorized to have a firearm on a commercial flight.
Okay, so now imagine this. You're somewhere over between Baltimore and Phoenix, and it dawns on someone that these guys aren't who they said they were. So when they land Hudgens and DeVore, these bounty hunters are arrested for carrying concealed weapons on an aircraft. Now, those charges did end up getting dropped, and the FAA didn't go after them with any penalties. But that's where the legal battle with Southwest Airlines really kicks off. Talk about an unexpected twist in their job that day.
And this arrest, even though they weren't convicted, is actually the heart of their negligence claim. The argument is that because the airline failed to properly figure out who these guys were and whether they could carry firearms on the plane, that's what directly led to their arrest. In legal terms, negligence means that they didn't act with the same level of reasonable care that you'd expect from a prudent airline in a similar situation. And the plaintiffs are saying Southwest fell short of that standard.
So Hudgens and DeVore, they sued Southwest for negligence. And at first, the trial court actually sided with Southwest. But then Court of Appeals got involved and reversed that decision, saying that they thought the airline might actually have had a duty to verify who was armed on their planes. That seems like a pretty significant legal determination right there. And, for our listeners who might be newer to the legal process, what happened here was that the trial court initially dismissed the case without a full trial. That's basically what summary judgment means. But the Court of Appeals, they looked at everything, again, all the arguments and evidence, and decided that there was enough of a question about whether the airline had a duty here and whether they breached it that a full trial was necessary to figure it all out.
Yeah, you're exactly right. The appellate court's decision really emphasizes how important it is for airlines to strictly follow those federal safety regulations. They recognize that keeping air travel safe and secure is paramount and hinges on airlines actually fulfilling those responsibilities. By sending it back for trial, they gave a jury the chance to determine whether Southwest really did fail in its duty of care.
So fast forward to the jury trial. Southwest is found liable. The compensatory damages that were awarded are pretty significant, $500,000 for each of the plaintiffs to compensate them for the harm they suffered. But here comes the real shocker, the punitive damages, a whopping $4 million each.
Wow.
That's 8 times the amount of the compensatory damages. It really makes you think what made the jury decide on such a huge punitive award.
Right. That number definitely grabs your attention. And juries, they award punitive damages not only to compensate the person who was harmed, but also to punish the defendant for behavior that's especially bad and to discourage them and others from doing something similar in the future. So in this case, the jury clearly believed that Southwest's negligence and maybe even their actions after the incident justified a really significant penalty that went way beyond just covering those immediate losses that the plaintiffs experienced.
Which brings us to BMW v. Gore and this idea of a constitutional check. So this massive punitive award, it raised a big question. Was it so big that it actually violated the due process clause of the Constitution? The appellate court thought so.
And they used the Supreme Court's framework from that BMW v. Gore case to figure this out. So let's break down these key points that courts use to decide if punitive damages are even allowed under the Constitution. First step, reprehensibility. The court had to look at how bad Southwest's conduct really was.
And what's interesting here is that the court acknowledged that Southwest's initial mistake in misidentifying the plaintiffs seemed more like carelessness than something they did on purpose to be malicious. But they didn't stop there. The court also looked closely at what Southwest did after the arrest happened. Specifically, there were allegations that their in-house counsel wouldn't share the results of an internal investigation unless the plaintiffs agreed to drop all their claims against the airline. The court saw that behavior as something that could have actually made the harm from the initial negligence even worse. So this tells us that the law isn't just concerned with preventing the initial mistake, but also with how companies act after they've messed up. Yeah, so even though that initial mistake might not have been intentionally malicious, the way Southwest's legal team allegedly handled things afterward, that definitely became part of how the court judged how reprehensible their whole conduct was. But despite all that, the court decided to categorize Southwest's actions as somewhere in the low to middle range of reprehensibility, especially because Hudgens and DeVore, they didn't suffer any physical harm.
Right. Under the framework from the Gore case, the fact that there wasn't any physical injury, that's a really important factor that makes it less likely for the court to see the behavior as highly reprehensible. And while the arrest and the whole legal process that followed was definitely stressful and inconvenient for the plaintiffs, the court saw that as different from cases where someone is actually physically hurt or even dies, which usually justify a harsher punishment.
Okay, next up, the ratio. The appellate court looked at the relationship between that $4 million punitive damages award per person and the $500,000 in compensatory damages that each plaintiff got. And they decided that 8.1 ratio was way too high. They emphasized that when compensatory damages are already a lot of money, which $500,000 certainly is a much smaller ratio of punitive to compensatory damages, is usually more appropriate. In fact, they even suggested that in some cases where the compensatory damages are substantial, even a 1.1 ratio might be the absolute most that's allowed under the Constitution. That's a pretty clear signal about how the court felt about things being proportional in this case.
Oh, absolutely. That's a very strong statement. And in the Gore case, the Supreme Court specifically warned against ratios that are way out of whack. The basic idea is that punitive damages, that they should have some reasonable connection to the actual harm that the plaintiff suffered. And when the compensatory damages are already big enough to deal with the plaintiff's losses, they're already doing a lot of the work of punishment and deterrence, so there's less need for a huge additional amount in punitive damages.
All right, third, the court considered comparable penalties. They pointed out the huge difference between the $4 million punitive award and the maximum civil penalty of $10,000 that the Federal Aviation Administration could have given Southwest for a similar violation of the regulations. I mean, that's a gigantic difference. The jury's award was 400 times bigger than what the FAA could have imposed.
Wow. And this guidepost is really important because it gives us a way to measure whether a punitive damages award makes sense. It suggests that punitive damages shouldn't be completely out of line with the civil or criminal penalties that already exist for similar misconduct under the law. That huge gap in this case was a big red flag for the appellate court that the jury's punitive award was excessive.
So in the end, the appellate court decided that Southwest was liable for negligence, and they upheld those compensatory damages of $500,000 for each plaintiff. But they did significantly reduce the punitive damages, bringing them down to a 1.1 ratio with the compensatory damages. So that means $500,000 in punitive damages for each plaintiff, too. Still a big financial hit for Southwest, but definitely a lot less than that initial $4 million.
And that final decision really shows the appellate court trying to strike a balance. They agreed that Southwest was negligent and should pay Hudgens and DeVore for what they went through. But they also stepped in to make sure that the punitive damages award was actually fair and proportional, bringing it more in line with how serious the misconduct was, the actual harm suffered, and the potential penalties under the regulations.
So what are the big takeaways for our listeners from all of this? First, and this is crucial for anyone involved in the airline industry or even just for people who fly, airlines have a very clear responsibility under those federal aviation regulations, specifically 14 CFR section 108.11 BO, to properly verify the credentials of anyone who's carrying a weapon on board. And it goes way beyond just glancing at an ID. This case really highlights how important it is to follow these security procedures and the legal trouble that can happen if you don't.
For sure. This case is a big wake-up call. That following regulations isn't just about checking boxes. These regulations are there for a reason, to keep people safe and secure. And if you don't take them seriously, it can lead to some pretty big legal and financial problems down the road.
Second, this case shows us that what an airline does after an incident can really affect those punitive damages. If it seems like a company is trying to block investigations or using information unfairly to pressure the plaintiffs, like it was alleged that Southwest's legal team did it, can be seen as really bad behavior that might justify some pretty big punitive penalties, even if the initial mistake wasn't intentionally malicious. It really seems like Southwest's actions after the fact played a key role in the appellate court even allowing any punitive damages at all.
That's a lesson that businesses in every industry should pay attention to. How a company responds to a mistake can be just as important, if not more important, than the mistake itself, especially when you're thinking about potential punitive damages. Being transparent, cooperating, and acting ethically after an incident has happened can really help to limit your liability in the long run.
And third, the Constitution, specifically through the BMW v. Gore case, sets limits on just how high those punitive damages can go. Courts are going to scrutinize these awards very carefully based on those three guideposts that we talked about. How bad the defendant's conduct was, the ratio between the punitive and compensatory damages, and how it compares to other potential penalties for similar actions. This case is a great example of how these abstract legal principles are actually used in the real world to make sure that jury verdicts are fair and proportional. It's not just theoretical stuff. It has real consequences for how these cases turn out.
Absolutely. And for anyone who's studying law, this case offers a fantastic real-world example of how that constitutional principle of due process actually protects people from jury awards that might be excessive. It shows how the courts have a duty to ensure fairness and proportionality when it comes to punitive damages, preventing what could be seen as arbitrary or unfair punishment.
Now, here's where things get really interesting. This case, it's more than just a weird story about bounty hunters and an airline messing up. It really highlights that careful balance that the legal system is always trying to strike, holding companies responsible when they're negligent, while also making sure that punitive damages serve their purpose without going overboard and becoming unfair. The way the appellate court went through those Gore guideposts step by step gives us some great insight into how these fundamental legal principles are used to prevent punishments that are out of line. So what does this all mean for you, our listener? It emphasizes that it's important to look beyond just the initial mistake or wrongdoing and really understand the bigger picture of legal responsibilities and the constitutional safeguards that are in place. It might even make you stop and think about the complex web of regulations that govern even seemingly ordinary things like air travel and the potentially huge legal consequences that can come up when those regulations aren't followed precisely. Just imagine, a simple misidentification like this could lead to a big legal battle and millions of dollars in potential damages. So what other responsibilities and liabilities might be lurking out there in different industries, things that we don't even think about? It's a good reminder that the law often takes us into unexpected territory and that really exploring these cases can help us better understand the world around us and the intricate legal system that's behind it all.
I think that's a great point to end on. It really encourages us all to keep learning, keep questioning, and to appreciate the complexities of the law.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll catch you next time.